Harbakukosai.
Okay, so Perakot Hei Pasuk Aleph. This is the very, very beginning of Parsha Bar Tzedei. Yidaber Hashem Moshe Behar Sinai Lemor. As opposed to the usual, the Yidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor, the added on words of Behar Sinai I put over here. Pasuk Beis says, Daber al Bnei Yisrael, V'amarta Aleihem, Kisavu al Ha'aretz Asher Ani Nosein Lachem, V'shavsa Aretz Shabbos L'Hashem. Right? Speak to Bnei Yisrael and you should say to them, when you come to the land that I will give to you, the land will rest a Shabbos L'Hashem. There will be a Shemitah. Now, Torah Kwanim asked in the beginning of the Parsha,
Behar Sinai.
Yeah. Why is it Behar Sinai?
Why is it Behar Sinai?
No, it's Behar. The name of the parsha doesn't really matter in that sense. But the Torah's quantum asked in the beginning of the parsha, why does the pasuk have to tell us that these laws of Shemitah were given on Har Sinai? The assumption is that all mitzvos were given on Har Sinai. That would be the normal assumption that you'd assume, right? And the answer is that the Torah's quantum says that Shemitah was given with all of its rules and all of its details on Har Sinai, and so to all the Torah laws. Everything was given with details and rules. Everything you needed to know was given on Har Sinai. Now Rashi quotes this medrash. This is not a medrash, it's just out there in the Torah's quantum. Rashi quotes that medrash and says that since we don't see any of these laws repeated in Parshas Devarim, in fact, all we see is a remez to Shemitah in Sefer Devarim, that has to be that all the laws were given in Har Sinai and they did nothing else they needed to know. That the laws were given right here in Har Sinai and that was it. The pasuk is telling us that Binyan Av, a Binyan Av tells us that not only is it true here, this is true everywhere. If it's true in this area, it's true in all places. Har Sinai contained every mitzvah and every single prat, everything you needed to know was given right there in Har Sinai. Okay. That's Rashi, that's the Torah's Kohanim. The Ramban doesn't like that Rashi. The reason why Ramban doesn't like it is because he says there's a bunch of mitzvahs that weren't repeated in Sefer Devarim. This is not the only thing that wasn't mentioned in Sefer Devarim. Why would Shemitah be mentioned over any of them? Number two, it makes no sense to compare this to other mitzvahs. Maybe only Shemitah was mentioned on Har Sinai while the other mitzvahs were mentioned everywhere else. There's no comparison you can make to say it's automatically put for everybody else. Why should that be exactly? So he goes on and he says it's not really from the Har Sinai, but rather from the words Eileh HaMitzvos, and that's where he gets it from. The drush stems from the end of the parsha, not really from over here. I'm not going to get into this as much as I probably could. The Mizrahi, the Gur Aryeh, the Be'er Basod, the Maskil Ladavid, everybody gets involved over here. They get into technical differences as to why Shemitah was on Har Sinai and all the mitzvos repeat after that. And you can look over there regarding all those technical details. But the question really that the Ramban asked that wasn't really answered by the Ramban is why Shemitah? Why this? Why is this being chosen over anything else? Why is this the mitzvah that's so important? What's up?
You just said that all of the mitzvahs were given in Har Sinai, but that's kind of contrary to our last pasuk in Mikukotai, which says these were the mitzvahs.
Eila mitzvahs Shedvarim, right?
These were given in Har Sinai, meaning the ones that come later were not.
That's exactly the pasuk, the Beit Darshan, that it's a binyan av to all the others. Since we're only mentioning these and we're not mentioning everything, so it says that's where the Ramban gets it from. He says from Eila HaMitzvos we learned that all the other mitzvos are learned out from here. He calls that the binyan av. So it's literally that pasuk that tells us this. So it's funny, but that's the idea behind it. That's the whole question of the Mizrahi. Listen, it's a long Mizrahi. I suggest everybody looks up that Mizrahi. But why Shemitah? So Orach Chaim HaKadosh probably gives the easiest, the most obvious answer, the one that everybody's heard, that accepting the Torah on Har Sinai allowed us to get the land. If we wouldn't have accepted the Torah, we wouldn't get Eretz Yisrael. So because we accepted the Torah on Har Sinai, therefore we have Eretz Yisrael. We're Zochah to the Parsha of Shemitah from that. That's the idea behind it.
Well, every nation gets a land.
So to speak, something that they got.
And rightfully, Avram came to Eretz Yisrael, descendants of Avram. Mm-hmm. We would be entitled to the land regardless of the Torah.
That's what you'd think, no matter what. We'd be entitled to some land. But because we accepted the Torah and allowed our nation to be Zochah to it, we were chosen to get Eretz Yisrael. Had we said no, some other nation would have taken the Torah. They would have gotten Eretz Yisrael together with it. They would have been the children of Avram Avinu. There were others. There were still Yishmaelim. There were still Esav. If anybody else could have been there. And the Orach Chaim HaKadosh says that's the quick connection. But let's go a little bit further. The Kliyakar says that we can connect Sphira to this idea as well. Obviously, the line that we got to on Har Sinai was 7 weeks of 7 days each. That's 49 days altogether, obviously, that got to Matan Torah. At that point, each day you're counting up, you're making the mountain holier and holier and holier. Less attainable by a normal Jew without the preparation necessary to get to this level. You have 49 days building yourself up further and further and further, getting to this level of Matan Torah. The 50 50th day, where they got to, that was Har Sinai, that became a day of Yom Tov, and the concept would be the same thing for Eretz Yisrael. Build it up. 7 years of planting the ground, and the seventh year not doing anything. Another 7 years, and another seven, until you count 49 years, till you get to the year of Shavuos, the Yovel, that 50th year, where it's true, utter Kedusha. Eretz Yisrael's Kedusha is contingent upon what we did in the Midbar. We counted up to make the Kedusha of, let's call it Har Sinai, so that allowed for Shemitah to be there, so to speak. Every mitzvah, as for the Hasidus and all of us over here, every mitzvah contains a makom, a zman, and an ish. There's a place, there's a time, there's a person, although we're going to ignore the person right now. The zman is the time of the 49 days, the 50th day being Shavuos. The place, that, so to speak, the place that we're referring to is the land of Eretz Yisrael as a whole. That 49 years of Eretz Yisrael is like 49 days of Shemitah and Yovel, etc. And that's the idea of what we're saying, that it made everything kadosh. It caused, we all heard the line about Avira to Eretz Yisrael Machaken, that when you're on the plane to Eretz Yisrael, the Avira, the airspace of Eretz Yisrael is already getting to you a little bit. You can learn a little bit better. As we all know, right, from being on that plane, there's nothing to do except for learn, because you're certainly not going to do anything else on that plane. The Avira to Eretz Yisrael Machaken, that level of Eretz Yisrael being Machaken, of making us wiser, is caused by the Kedusha of Shemitah, of Shavuos. That's the idea behind it. Now, let's go into a famous Gemara. The Ksav Sofer brings down this Gemara, Shabbos Lamed Aleph. You've all heard of it. Before, the Ger came up to Hillel HaZaken and said, teach me the entire Torah while I'm standing on one foot. And he's standing on one foot, teach me the entire Torah. And he taught him. Hillel taught him. Kol desoni aloch al tavid l'chavircha. Anything that's hated to you, don't do to your friend. Now, simply put, that means v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. Right? You wanted to say it in a different way. It's really v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. So really, says the Ksav Sofer, refers to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The friend is referring to God. What you don't want to do, don't do to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Don't get involved with Hashem himself. That's what the Ksav Sofer is saying. Can you imagine giving a person that you know everything he needs? You give him a house, a car, food, all of his furniture, everything. You're giving him absolutely everything that he possibly could need. And then you explain to him that, listen, these gifts are not coming just for free. You have to work a little bit for them, and you have rules. You're allowed to eat this food only at this point. You're allowed to sit in this chair only on this day. You're only allowed to do certain things at certain times. So I'm giving you everything, but I'm making a rule at the exact same time. What do you think? And the guy goes ahead and says, sure, that makes sense. All right, I can follow those rules. And then doesn't follow them at all. Does absolutely nothing. Every time you tell him to sit down, he stands up. Every time you tell him not to eat that, he goes ahead and eats it. And he does everything the exact opposite of what you think. So you'd say, I can't believe it. I gave you everything. I'm the one who told you. I'm doing this contingent upon you listening to me. And you're not doing it? How could you do this? How do you not care enough that I'm the one that gave this to you? So the line is, says the Ksav Sofer, that obviously the Nimshal, if anybody didn't get it there, that was a little, you know, wasn't so obvious. It's that Kadosh Baruch Hu saying to us, I'm giving you everything and I'm making rules. Now that I gave you everything, now follow my rules. How in the world could you go against it? How could you not do exactly what a Kadosh Baruch Hu asked you to do, so to speak? So, in other words, it goes like this.
Give other people things. And
wait, rega, meaning you say, by the way, there are Shemitz Be'enoach, but nonetheless, regardless, the idea is how can we expect others to listen to us when we make those exact demands and not listen to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Don't do to your friend, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what you wouldn't want others to do to you. So what Hillel was telling him, although it sounded like v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, just treat your friend nicely and everything else is a parish, go learn it out. That's not what he meant. He meant treat HaKadosh Baruch Hu the way you would treat yourself. Treat HaKadosh Baruch Hu the way you would do if you did what he did. And if you do that, then everything's going to be that way. And that's by far the best definition of how Shemitah works. Shemitah is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I am taking care of everything. I've given you everything. Listen to me. You think you're going to lose out by not keeping Shemitah? You think you're going to lose out by keeping Shemitah and not doing this? I'm promising you, everything will be taken care of. Don't ask the silly questions. Don't even ask it in the first place. What are we going to eat? Don't even bother. I will take care of you. You'll see it's going to be taken care of. That's the idea. Now, I know the concept is greater than the actual Lamaisa. When it boils down to it, for me to say, yeah, it's easy to keep Shemitah when I'm not a farmer in Eretz Yisrael, makes it a lot easier than the guy who's sitting in Eretz Yisrael saying, but I'm starving. I understand that. When the sixth year is not necessarily necessarily a bumper crop in our eyes, it's difficult for any farmer to take that to himself and say it. I realize that the concept, the conceptual idea, is better than the idea Lemaisa of how it works Lemaisa. Nonetheless, as Aksav Sofer, that's the idea of how Shemitah, why Shemitah should represent every other mitzvah in the Torah. No other mitzvah is so all-inclusive that shows us the true bitachon and amunah that we have to have in our Kadosh Baruch Hu. What we have to expect and what we have to have, that's how the Aksav Sofer understands it, that's how we take from over there. Now, the Aksav Sofer, it's unbelievable. I can't understand how the Aksav Sofer did this. He has, again, 12 different Divrei Torah in 4 different Sfarim regarding this question of Ma'in in Shemitah Etzel Har Sinai. I'm not going to give all of them. I'm just going to say the idea of what he says. Normally, mitzvos are a form of gaiva. It causes a person to have ego, pride, raise himself up, right, and tell himself, I'm so great, look at what I get to do. I'm able to do this while nobody else does. It makes me feel a little bit better about myself. The reason why they were given on Har Sinai was for the exact opposite reason. Knock yourself down. Har Sinai was the smallest mountain. It's not on Har Kamel or any of the other mountains that are out there. It was done on Har Sinai. Because although we were given the mitzvos, but we're not special enough to deserve it on our own, we were lucky enough that HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose us to be able to get the mitzvos. So take Har Sinai as a lesson and learn that you're a nobody, you're a nothing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you everything, says that Chassam Sofer the idea. Now really, the mitzvos are given to Bnei Yisrael in 3 different places. This is a fact that barely anybody knows. If you would ask a person, where will we receive the mitzvos, you would just say Har Sinai and that's that. But the truth is, there were 3 places that we got mitzvos, aside from the mitzvos that we already had. But we had the mitzvos in Har Sinai. We got it by the Ohel Moed. The Ohel Moed is a separate area, meaning by the Ohel Moed where Moshe Rabbein would teach Klal Yisrael what it was, but not on the mountain of Har Sinai itself, just in the area of Midbar Sinai. And the third place was in Arvos Moav. In Sefer Devarim, we're all by Arvos Moav, and a new bris, a third bris, is given to Klal Yisrael. Bris number 1 was the blood that we were sprinkled with by Har Sinai. We lost that, unfortunately. That bris was gone because we did the Egel Azov. Bris number 2 is right now. That's Parshas Bahar B'Kukosai. We got a brand new bris after Moshe Rabbeinu came down from the mountain. He went through all the mitzvahs again and told them, now you have to keep it. And the third one is the 40th year where we accepted the concept called Arvus, where I am responsible for my fellow Jew, and that was the third bris. That was the third time that other mitzvahs were added on. 2 of them have the Tokcha. The first one was given without the Tokcha completely. The idea behind what happened in Har Sinai is Har Sinai stood for humility, the Olmoid for Hasmada, how to learn and continue to learn, now Bas Moav for learning with Achdus and the Chavrusa getting together. Thus, everything was given in the minds of Klal Yisrael and Har Sinai. There were nuances and specific halacha lamaisa that did not come out until Avos Moav. That's why last week's parsha we see right by the Makalo, the Megadeth, right? You had the cursor, the guy who got out, and the cursor came out, and Moshe Rabbeinu had to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu what to do. What do you mean? You got all the laws. He had the laws, but he never got the lamaisa. What do you do in this specific situation? He was told all the machlokesim, meaning the different ways of understanding the way that the Torah goes, because Torah has very many realities to it. But only one thing can we do in this world.
Is that what Rashi and the Ramban are arguing about? Why didn't they say that at the beginning? Like Rashi says, all the mitzvahs were given in Har Sinai. That's one.
With all the kol and all the prophets. So that's why I say, in the mind, everything was there. Just what to do halachically, which is another aspect of the Torah. To learn halacha is very different from how most of us have always learned throughout our yeshiva career. We're not learning halacha l'maisa, we're learning the different opinions. Even Beis Shammai is an opinion, even though we don't hold of it. That we've learned, but the learning of halacha l'maisa, that was given later on as the years went by, and finally in Arvos Moav did they get the details that they needed in order to paskin l'halacha. That's what they ended up doing. Moshe Rabbeinu led them up to that point, but it was a difficult point. So that's what it means. They got everything on Har Sinai. They heard everything on Har Sinai. All the details are given on Har Sinai. But they still didn't know exactly what to do. That's what it was. So here's the pshat. Shemitah also teaches us this point of humility, that the land is not ours. So Ma'inyan Shemitah is Har Sinai. The mitzvah Shemitah does not need the reminder of Har Sinai. Har Sinai is a reminder that you're a nothing. Shemitah is a reminder that you're nothing. So why is Shemitah written by Har Sinai if this mitzvah doesn't require you to knock down your ego? It seems superfluous to say such a thing. For that reason, we're saying it must be a bininav. We're building up from here. Since it's a double limud, it's Har Sinai and it's Shemitah. Let's teach this to all the mitzvot of the Torah. All the mitzvot were given in Har Sinai. They were all given with everything they needed in Har Sinai. That's the idea behind it. Now that's that. There's another idea. Do you know why it was called Sinai? Was called Sinai as it was?
What?
The Sinai. There are other answers. There are four answers given because of the Sinai of the Akum Aleinu. That's the Gemara on Tainus. But Sinai was also known because of the Sinai. And in fact, they say, again, I have no idea. I've never been to Har Sinai, so I don't know. They say the rocks have that picture of the Sinai on them. You've seen them before. That picture of the Sinai, that when you cut open the rocks, they have some type of a flora that got caught into, I don't know how it works exactly. It's fossilized, right? It looks like fossilized rock, and it looks like it's got an actual Sinai inside, or burning bush that's inside the actual area. Thus, Sinai stands for Sinai. Now, what's the Sinai stand for? A thorn bush. It's obvious that it's Pirish Mi Taivas Olam Hazeh. Stay away from the Taivas Olam Hazeh, or you're going to be pierced by the thorns of the Sinai. Get away from it. Don't go anywhere near. Get away from all those Taivas. The proper mitzvah to apply to such an idea, that the mitzvah that, again, repeats that idea, would be Shemitah. Stay away from extra Taivas. You want a little bit more, says Hashem, stop. Don't go any further. Don't do that. So again, Ma'inin Shemitah Tzar Sinai. If they're teaching you the same lesson, what are you doing? That's the Chassam Sofer, the other Chassam Sofer that's there. Komitz Minchoch. I don't know who the Komitz Minchoch is. He's quoted in two different places. Some the Pardes Yosef, also some quoted by I forgot what the sefer was called. But the Komitz Minchoch is brought down. It says, the point of Shemitah is to remind you that everything comes from Hashem. We sometimes think that we're too small and insignificant to really deserve to be connected to other people. That's what we think. For the proof of that, Hashem says, look at Har Sinai. Har Sinai was tiny. It was a nothing mountain. There was nothing on it. It was a thorn bush mountain. And nonetheless, it was chosen. And therefore, we should remind ourselves of that ourselves and say to ourselves, there's bitachon. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu pays attention to us and even our fields, that He should care about us. Then we have the famous answer. And everybody's heard this answer before, and it's an important answer to know. Shemitah proves that the Torah was given to Har Sinai. Now, what do I mean by proof? There is no absolute. Nobody. Yeah. There's no absolute proof that we received the Torah in Har Sinai. There's nothing we can do, right? We have no absolute proof that we can show back to people and say, look, this is what we got, here's where it was. There are no kelim that are outside a certain mountain that show that we were there. There's no historical absolute evidence that shows us that we were in that area. Yeah, we don't know. We have absolutely no idea. But it makes... Exactly. Well, we have that. But again, that claim is a claim. It's not an absolute proof. It says, and really Rav Schwab as well, no one would ever dare to promise a bumper crop every sixth year. No one would ever dare to do it. No one would ever say, I'm promising you, if you ask, what am I going to eat in the seventh year and the eighth year during Yovel? What are you going to eat? Says God, I promise you, you will have a bumper crop your sixth year. That's crazy. No one would ever imagine doing it. In Haraya, no religion ever has done it. Nobody promises this world. They promise the next world.
Why is there all these charities and support people keeping Shemitah?
Now you're getting political on me.
No.
I know what you're saying. I know. I hear you.
Ask me a question.
I hear you.
Is there any documented proof that farmers all
that the sixth year is going to be? Now that's the Chassam Sofer. I'm not going into the actuality. The reality of the matter, it's possible that what it means by the sixth year is going to last doesn't mean that the sixth year is an actual bumper crop. It's that if you trust the Kadosh Baruch Hu through everything in the granary, keep taking stuff out and it'll somehow last. But not that it actually will. The sixth year was good? Seventh year is fantastic? That's terrible. Oh, but I'm saying that's not good. No, what I'm saying is that the reality of the situation doesn't matter. I'm telling you this: it's the promise.
If you make a promise,
no.
Did you just say that?
You're right. No. There's no question. Which means that a Kadosh Baruch Hu obviously is to fulfill the promise. But the point that we're making, the proof positive that we know that it's true, is the fact that someone would promise it. Moshe could never promise this. No one would ever promise this. No human being would ever do it. So therefore it's there, says the Chassam Sofer. Now you have to fill it. Now you have to fulfill what your promise is. Someone has to work. Yeah.
I just recently asked somebody that question that they asked me, and I heard a couple different answers, and one is it's only during the time of the Beis Hamikdash. Another thing is it's only maybe when we're all in the United States.
Somehow it has to work in a certain fashion.
And I think, right, but the combination is that in a chayit can mess it up.
Oh, that Chataim would be able to mess it up.
It has anything to do with the fact that this is a one mitzvah.
I would say it the same way. It's strange to say that a promise straight out in a pasuk. This is not a Rashi or a Ramban that we could say maybe he meant it like this. A pasuk is telling us, here's what I'm promising. So maybe it's going to be different. Listen, I'm telling you, the Chassam Sofer was, to me, it was the best answer. That it will be a bumper crop if you treat it as if it's a bumper crop, even if it actually isn't. Meaning you will have enough food and it'll be perfectly fine, but you have to keep reaching in and not looking in the bank account and seeing what you have. I know that's crazy, but that's the bitachon. Just keep reaching in, you'll take more, and that's out there.
Like a Baba Sali thing.
Yeah, almost like that. Almost like how the Baba Sali would keep pouring. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you just, you don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense, but he did it. He did it. Rav Schwab adds on, the truth is, this law is ridiculous for any society. It's beyond, forget about the fact that it was promised. What society would tell their entire nation, no one plant for a full year? That in an agricultural society, which Eretz Yisrael was, that is ridiculous. They don't have enough minerals and nutrients and other things in the land that they could export to other countries to get food in. To say this, now if you want to make a rule like this, if this was a, let's call it a communist society and we're going to do it this way, then what you would do is you would say, alright, group A, you keep Shemitah in year one. Group B, you keep it in year two. Group C, you keep it in year three. That's what you would do. But to do this, everybody in 1 year just stop. You can't do that. That will destroy your entire economy. It will knock down everybody. That's the craziness. Yeah, of course, they do leave land cattle. But yeah, you do one and by one. But to say to everybody all at once, that's crazy. And again, Haraya says, Rav Schwab, no nation has ever dreamed of doing it. So again, both of those answers, in some way, is our stamp of approval that the Torah was given in Har Sinai by God. That's our stamp of approval. A mitzvah like this, which is so impossible to even fathom, let alone to accomplish, shows us that it has to be given by Har Sinai by God.
Negative, though. I mean, that's like proving some, like...
I know. And what I said before, there is no such thing as a proof positive. We don't. We have ideas and concepts that can allow us to understand a little bit better how we say or why we say that that's true. Rav Moshe goes into... I'm not gonna go into Rav Moshe for right now. Rav Moshe is another issue altogether. But the Imre Shefer says, he gives another reason for this whole connection. He says that Shemitah is called Shabbos. And just like Shabbos is Mashpia on all the next few days of the week, on the 6 days of the week afterward, that if I keep Shabbos correctly, the Shefa of Shabbos itself goes out to those days and makes those days holy. Which is exactly why I'm Motzei Shabbos. Why we do Vihi Noam. And we, afterward, we do a Yoshev B'Seser Elyon. We try to take the Kedusha of Shabbos and apply it with Yoshev B'Seser Elyon, which is called the Shir Sol Pagoyim, the Shir of the demons, so to speak. The Shir that goes against all the evil that's in the world, and we take that right on Motzei Shabbos when the evil's coming in and the Kedusha is leaving, and we say, no, we want this Kedusha to last. That's exactly why we have that on. So the only time we don't do it is when Yom Tov falls out during the week itself, because then there's a Kiddusha that's already there for the week. We unfortunately didn't get that on Pesach, because Pesach fell out on a Friday night. So because of that, we did Vihi Noam on the Shabbos beforehand, because there is no extra Kiddusha that's there. And this, by Shavuos, we also miss out on it, because Motzei Shabbos is Shavuos. So we're going to say Vihi Noam. I'm sorry? You say it in even Chol Hamoed? Smart and smart, not Jewish. So,
holier.
Trying to bring more Kedusha in. More Kedusha in.
Interesting. We don't say it before because
the
14th.
Right, so that's that. Right. The 14th was Yeshua. Right, that was a. So either way, we have it. It's the concept. The Imre Shefer says that makes sense, that the 14th would be a Yom Tov enough to be able to keep it. Either way, so too Shemitah. You want your grain to grow? Keep Shemitah, and that Shefa, that Kedusha that comes down on Shemitah will allow for your next 6 years to grow completely, and that's the idea behind it. That's the concept of what it is. And so too you can apply that to Har Sinai. All the other mountains jumped and whatever, but you didn't do anything for Shabbos to affect the rest of the week. You just kept Shabbos. You didn't do anything for Shemitah to affect the next 6 years. You just kept Shemitah. So to Har Sinai, Har Sinai didn't do anything to get the Kedusha that it got. It sat there and didn't jump. It didn't yell at a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It didn't make a big scene. It sat down there and said, okay. And that's the connection here. There's an amazing Rav Wolfson over here about Ashkacha Pratis, the famous Machlokas Ramban and Rambam regarding Ashkacha Pratis, where the Rambam says that Hashkafa Pratis is on the klal as a whole, and on the individual, when the individual deserves it. That's in Mori Nebuchim, while the Ramban is famous that Hashkafa Pratis is on every single little bit of the earth, every bit, every malach of every blade of grass has Hashkafa Pratis, the famous machlokes between them, and he explains it in how Shemitah and Har Sinai go together as well. It's a very long piece, a very, very long piece.
To hold that way, there is Hashkafa Pratis, there's no limitation to it.
It's a long subject. Mori Nebuchim, he goes through it for about four different pieces, and it's an amazing. I don't know if we'll make it, but the Mori Nebuchim is definitely there. Listen, yeah, I mean, Rav Saad Yigon says really the same thing. Rav Saad Yigon also goes into the entire idea of Hashkacha Pratis. Hashkacha Pratis is a Rishon and Geonim. Between the Rishon and the Geonim, the subject is so filled, so absolutely filled. It's an amazing thing. The Hasidim, and really us nowadays, we've sort of taken the Ramban as our, you know, as our ikker, because that's what the Ramchal did, and that's what our Sfarim, the Mesil Yesharim, you know, in Mesil Yesharim, the way he explains Hashkacha Pratis in Derech Hashem, we've really taken the Ramban's Shita more to heart than we have the other Rishonim. But nonetheless, there is the other one. He explains it when it comes to Shemitah and how their Machlokas applies, why Shemitah should apply to Har Sinai. Huge piece, but there's no time to go through it right now. So let's go into one other thing over here. Ibn Ezra says this was set up. The Parsha is really, it belongs in Parsha Mishpatim. This whole Parsha, the Har Sinai, doesn't belong here. Transplant it back in Parsha Mishpatim, says Ibn Ezra. So why is it here? Because we're going into the, we're trying to tell you the entering into Eretz Yisrael is conditional. We're about to go to Eretz Yisrael. That's what we think. So it's conditional. We have to keep the mitzvos, and if not, it could be bad. That's the only one. But really, this whole Parsha is really, it belongs all the way before. That's where it belongs. The Ramban says, no. It's all in order. And the truth is, the Ramban makes a lot of sense. Think about what happened. Bnei Yisrael sinned with the Egel Azov. Now we know Kisis is out of order, according to the Ramban. So Kisis is out of order. Kisisa belongs right after Matan Torah. So we have Yisro, Kisisa. And then after that happened, we were given the mitzvos of the Mishkan, which is Truma, Tetzaveh, Vayakel, Pekudeh. That right there. Once we got the Mishkan, we had to understand what to do. So then came Vayikra and Tzav that explained to us how to deal with Korbanos. Shmini, that dealt with what we're going to do on the 8th day of the Miluin. And then we got into Nadav and Avihu a little bit over there. After we went to Shmini Tazria Mitzora, which dealt with the Kohanim in a different fashion. The Kohanim as the health regulators of the nation, making sure that Tzaras is taken care of, and then Tuma and Tara, which is such an important deal with Korbanos. We then went to Achremos Kedoshim, which deals with the idea of becoming Kadosh. How do you become a Kadosh to be able to be there? The laws of Kedusha, that's Achremos Kedoshim. Emor, which is the law specifically for Kohanim, what passels a Kohen, what allows a Korban, the Mumin for Korbanos, etc. We get into the Makalel, because the Makalel was around that time. And then comes Bahar. Bahar is, and now our bris comes where we have to keep the mitzvos. It made sense, says the Ramban, the whole flow of the parshios. It's not out of order. Here is when we made the actual bris. What? The only thing is, Bahar was actually a couple months earlier. It was before Shmini. But it makes sense to go from Vayikra to Tzav Shmini. We're talking about the Korbanos. We're talking about what happened. So we went into, and on the 8th day, here's what we did. So it made sense. We skipped a couple months. But regardless, this is the idea that he said we went into the Mishkan, we went into everything, and that's what ended up happening. And that's, as we said before, this is the second of the three brisim that we made with our Kadosh Baruch Hu. As a side note, by the way, there were three other brisim that were made by Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The bris Ben Abisarim is the famous one by Avram. Yitzchak was given one nevuah with our Kadosh Baruch Hu, and Yaakov, you know, at the end of his life, when he made the neder right before he went down to Mitzrayim, the three brisim. The bris Mila is part of the bris, but the bris Ben Abisarim is the one that was the bris that he promised the land to Klal Yisrael if they do what they're supposed to do. Rav Hirsch understands this through the Smichas Parshios. We just went to the Makalo, right? The Megadeth, the cursor. The guy got up there and he cursed HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he went down and he said it. Now, it seems clearly, like we said before, that that means that the laws were not given on Har Sinai. That Moshe Rabbeinu was sort of winging it, and when he needed something, he called HaKadosh Baruch Hu and said, alright, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what do I do in this situation? That sounds like that's what happened with the Megadeth. The guy cursed, they didn't know what to do, they went to Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know what to do. So he asked God. Now, right now, when we hear that that happened, that it seems that Moshe Rabbeinu had to find out halachos now that they didn't get the laws on Har Sinai, here is where we tell you, no, they really did. They got everything on Har Sinai. Sinai. So why didn't they know it? He says, because they didn't have certain ideas, as we said. They didn't have the halakha l'maisa. That they didn't have. And Rav Hirsch goes on and says that this is something, the whole cursing business didn't make any sense to them. There were certain laws that they didn't even know certain details of, because they couldn't even believe that someone could blaspheme and curse out God's name the way that he did. The Maral Diskin says this as well. He goes into the halakha l'maisa thing. And finally, we're going to end with this Rav Schwab. There's an unbelievable Rav Schwab over here, and he says the following. He says, I don't understand. Why was this mitzvah skipped out on? Why do we say that in Arvos Moav, when they were sitting there at the end of the Midbar, they went through all the other mitzvahs except for Shemitah? Why not repeat Shemitah in Sefer Devarim instead of hinting to it in a certain way? Why would that be? She says the following. Two brisim. Bris here and bris in Arvos Moav in Sefer Devarim. Tokacha here with 49 curses. Tokacha there in Kisavo with 98 curses altogether. Okay, in both, they pledged their allegiance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they would receive the rewards promised to them if they kept it, and they would receive punishments if they didn't. That's the idea. In this Tokacha, the Tokacha that we have here, the punishments are clearly designated because they didn't keep Shemitah. The Pasuk says it straight out. Check out Parak Vav, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, and Pasuk Lamed Hey. Now the land is going to rest, says the Torah. After you get all these punishments, and you're going to have to leave, and you're going to get ghosts, now, finally, the land will get its Shemitah. That's what's happening over here. This bris that they're making right now, the main mitzvah, says Rav Schwab, that they had to keep, that they knew that they had to get into, was Shemitah. That was the mitzvah they had to keep. Why Shemitah? Because it's the opening of the door to all other mitzvahs. It is the pure emuna ubitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you couldn't get in anywhere else. That's the idea of what Shemitah stands for. It's so inclusive and so important, it stands for every other mitzvah. So we're not going to repeat it later on. We're going to make sure that you know that it's right over here. Why? Because we want you to know, and we want you to understand the Tokacha, the whole reason why we got gullus from the land in the first place, is because we didn't treat the land properly. And what did that mean? We didn't have proper bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To understand that a little bit easier, the Gemara says, why did we leave the land? Because we weren't borchu batorah tzchila. We didn't make a bracha on Torah, a bracha, you know, before we started learning. We just went into learning. We didn't do that. What does that mean? What it means is we just didn't show the proper respect to the Torah, to the land, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what he gave us. When you don't show that respect, that's the idea of where HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, therefore, you can't be in my land. Get out of my land and let it have its Shemitah on its own. That's the purpose of why we don't repeat it later on, why we want to do it over here. So to go over very quickly, we just said, we mentioned the Torah's Kohanim, the reason why Ma'ini and Shemitah, Eitzel Har Sinai, or Lehar Sinai. What's the difference? We went through Rashi, the Ramban, and possibly the other Rishonim. We then went through 10 reasons why Shemitah was compared to Har Sinai. We get the Or HaChaim, the Kliyakar, the Ksav Sofer, Chsam Sofer. We went through the Kometz Mincha, another Chsam Sofer, and Rav Schwab, Rav Moshe, we skipped, but the Imre Shefer, and finally the Rav Wolfson, which we didn't really go into. And then finally we went into the Ibn Ezra and the Ramban about whether this Parsha is out of order or in order, and then finally going into the Rav Schwab at the end, explaining why this mitzvah had to be here and the importance of Shemitah over anything else. Shkach, everybody. Have a good Shabbos.